White stars encircle a snow-capped mountain, the logo of Paramount Pictures. The film opens with a recap of the climax of Star Trek II. Captain Spock faces Admiral James T. Kirk from behind the transparent wall of the reactor core chamber, where, having saved the ship, he's dying of radiation poisoning.
Don't breathe, Admiral. It is logical. The needs of the many outweigh
the needs of the few.
Or the one. I have been, and always shall be, your friend. Live long and prosper.
Now Kirk addresses the crew of the USS Enterprise as Spock's coffin slides past.
We are assembled here today to pay final respects to our honored dead. This death takes place in the shadow of a new life, the sunrise of a new world, a world that our beloved comrade gave his life to protect and nourish.
He did not feel this sacrifice a vain or empty one. Of my friend, I can only say this.
His eyes fill with tears, his lips twitch as he searches for the words.
Of all the souls I have encountered in my travels, his was the most human.
The coffin enters a tube.
Others?
Kirk struggles to hold back his sobs as the coffin is fired out of the photon torpedo tube. As soon as it disappears behind a planet, a piercing bright light appears at the edge of the vast, grey globe.
Space. The final frontier. These are the continuing voyages of the starship Enterprise. Her ongoing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
A single dazzling white sun penetrates the layer of cloud surrounding the planet. Nestling amongst the lush green tropical vegetation covering the planet's surface is the shiny black coffin. Paramount Pictures presents a Harve Bennett production, Star Trek III: The Search for Spock. Ferns wave their fronds in the wind, silhouetted against the pink sky. Thick, swirling clouds envelop the unruly planet. The film stars William Shatner as Admiral James T. Kirk, DeForest Kelly as Bones, James Doohan as Scotty, George Takei as Zulu, Walter Koenig as Chekhov, and Nichelle Nichols as Uhura. Also starring Mark Leonard as Sarek and Merritt Buttrick as David. Special appearance by Dame Judith Anderson as T'Lar, introducing Robin Curtis as Lieutenant Savick and Christopher Lloyd as Krug. Against a glittering starfield, more title credits appear. Music composed by James Horner. Star Trek was created by Gene Roddenberry. The film was written and produced by Harve Bennett and directed by Leonard Nimoy. The Starship Enterprise glides through the star-studded blackness of space, the flank of the cigar-shaped engineering hull, and the underside of the saucer-shaped command section joined to it by a slanting neck, are scarred with patches of blackened metal.
USS Enterprise Captain's personal log. With most of our battle damage repaired, we're almost home. Yet I feel uneasy, and I wonder why.
Admiral Kirk turns away from the view screen and paces gloomily through the bridge.
Perhaps it is the emptiness of this vessel. Most of our trainee crew have been reassigned. Lieutenant Savick and my son David are exploring the Genesis planet, which he helped create. And Enterprise feels like a house with all the children gone. No, more empty even than that. The death of Spock is like an open wound. It seems that I have left the noblest part of myself back there, on that newborn planet.
Kirk addresses his crew.
Status, Mr. Sulu.
On course, Admiral. Estimating space dock in 2.1 hours.
Very well. Mr. Chekov, I'll need a pre-approach scan. Take the science station, please.
Yes, sir.
Uhura. Any response from Starfleet on our Project Genesis inquiries?
No, sir. There is no response.
That's very odd.
Kirk goes to his chair and hails engineering.
Scotty, progress report.
It's almost done, sir. You'll be fully automated by the time we dock.
The timing is excellent, Mr. Scott. You fix the barn door after the horses come home. How much refit time till we can take her out again?
8 weeks, sir. But you don't have 8 weeks, so I'll do it for you in two.
Mr. Scott, have you always multiplied your repair estimates by a factor of four?
Certainly, sir. How else can I keep my reputation as a miracle worker?
Your reputation is secure, Scotty.
Kirk gets up.
Mr. Sulu, take the car. I'll be at my quarters.
Aye, sir.
Sir?
A trainee crewman.
I was wondering, are they planning a ceremony when we get in? I mean a reception?
A hero's welcome, son. Is that what you'd like? Well, God knows I should be. This time we've paid for the party with our dearest blood.
Doors slide open automatically. Kirk enters a turbo lift. As the doors close again, Kirk presses a button, then leans against the wall, blinking back tears. A merchant ship rotates slowly in space, its grubby hull flanked by swept back wings. On board, two men sit at consoles, surveying the inky blackness through a viewscreen in front of them. Behind them stands a woman, elaborately attired in shiny dress and headwear.
Steady. Steady, boys. Keep scanning. Thought you people were reliable. Where the hell is he?
He's been here for some time. Put me on hailing frequency. Commander Krug, this is Valkris.
Subtitles translate. I've purchased the Genesis data, ready to transmit.
Well done, Valkris. Well done.
What the hell is...
Shopit! It's Shop!
Disengage cloaking device. Directly above the merchant ship, a huge mottled green vessel magically appears. On board, the captain, Krug, barks orders. Krug, with a Klingon's characteristic tall forehead marked by bony protrusions, pets a Targ, an ugly slimy beast. Saying, transmit data now, he gets up. Valkris leans forward and slips the data file into a slot. Krug sits down beside a crewmate at a monitor. Images of Kirk and complex diagrams flicker on the screen as the data is transferred. Transmission completed. You will find it useful. Then you have seen it? Valkris answers, I have, my lord. Unfortunate, says Krug. Valkris answers, understood. Eyes narrowed, Krug considers for an instant, then jumps up, returns to his command seat and says... Thrusters. The Klingon ship, shaped like a bird of prey, dips its right wing and moves away from the merchant ship. The ship's captain turns round to Valkris.
What the hell's going on? When do I get paid off?
Soon, Captain. Quite soon.
The Klingon ship sweeps away from the merchant ship, then arches back round, maneuvering itself into attack position.
Kaplachawi.
Valkris says, "Success, my lord, and my love." Krug replies, "You'll be remembered with honor." The Klingon ship swings round and thunders towards the merchant ship. Krug barks the order to fire. A green disruptor blast fires out of the Klingon ship's wingtips at the merchant ship, which explodes. Lumps of flaming debris spin through space after the retreating Klingons. Krug jumps up, saying, "New course, Federation neutral zone." Leaving the bridge, he turns back and points to his pet. "Feed him," he orders. One of his crew replies, "Yes, my lord," looking worriedly at the toothy beast. The USS Enterprise approaches space dock. Floating in the Earth's orbit, the dock's shaped like a mushroom, its long stem swollen by further round sections, its whole body dotted and streaked with blue and white lights. Commander Uhura speaks into her communications headset.
"Approach control, this is Enterprise. Ready for docking maneuvers."
"Enterprise is cleared to dock."
"Lock off."
The bridge is flooded with soft blue light.
"Systems locked."
"Space dock, you have control."
"Affirmative, Enterprise. Enjoy the ride, and welcome home."
"Enterprise confirms."
Lights blink and glimmer across the sloped surface of the mushroom's massive cap, guiding the Enterprise towards an opening doorway. The ship slips through the doorway, its saucer first, its two propulsion units, supported at the rear of the engineering hull on diagonal pylons, and last to move inside as the ship enters space dock. Two men monitor its course at a console. A starship, similar in shape to the Enterprise but newer and with a sleeker design, is docked nearby.
"Would you look at that?"
"My friends, the great experiment. The Excelsior. Ready for trial runs."
The crew gaze at it through the view screen.
"She's supposed to have transwarp drive. Aye. And if my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a wagon."
"Come, come, Mr. Scott. Young minds, fresh ideas, be taught."
Scotty chuckles. People on an observation deck gaze out of an enormous window at the Enterprise gliding past. Seeing the battle scars marking the grey flanks of its engineering hull and rear propulsion units, a red-headed woman, Commander Janice Rant, ex-member of the Enterprise crew, shakes her head in dismay. Kirk calmly oversees docking from the captain's chair.
"Stand by umbilical and gravitational support systems."
"Aye, sir. Moorings activated. All systems standing by."
"Admiral, this is not possible."
"Mr. Chekhov?"
"An energy reading from C deck, from inside Mr. Spock's quarters."
"I ordered Spock's quarters sealed."
"Yes, sir. I sealed the room myself. Nevertheless, I am reading a life form there."
"This entire crew seems on the edge of obsessive behavior concerning Mr. Spock."
Kirk sees the security alert on the monitor himself.
"Sir, security reports the door to Spock's quarters has been forced."
"I'm on my way. Sulu, continue docking procedure."
"Aye, sir."
Kirk enters the turbo lift. Scotty hurries to check off side.
"Yanni Sumashichi. No vote."
Chekhov gestures towards the flashing security alert over a diagram of C-Deck. Kirk jogs along a corridor. Two security guards armed with phasers are lingering outside a door. The yellow no-entry ribbon has been torn through, and the door stands slightly ajar. The flashing red security alarm stops as Kirk slips gingerly into the darkened room. Hovering near to the doorway, he turns on a dim light, then ventures forward, looking around him uncertainly. A voice stops him in his tracks.
"Jim. Help me."
Kirk approaches a figure cloaked in shadow seated at the end of the room.
"You left me on Genesis. Why did you do that? Help me."
Kirk rushes forward, grabs the figure and hauls him to his feet. It's Dr. Bones McCoy.
"Bones? What the hell are you doing? Have you lost your mind?
Help me, Jim. Take me home."
"Bones, we are. We are home."
"Then perhaps it's not too late. Climb the steps, Jim. climb the steps of Mount Solea.
Mount Solea? Bones, Mount Solea is on Vulcan. We're home. On Earth.
Remember.
Bones faints.
Admiral, docking is completed. Starfleet Commander Morrow is on his way for inspection.
Uhura, get the medics down here! Get them now!
The uniformed Enterprise crew are lined up for Starfleet Commander Morrow's inspection.
You have all done remarkable service under the most difficult conditions. You'll be receiving Starfleet's highest commendation. And more importantly, extended shore leave. That is all but you, Mr. Scott. They need your wisdom on the new Excelsior. Report there tomorrow as Captain of Engineering.
With all appreciation, sir, I prefer to supervise the refit of Enterprise.
I'm afraid that won't be necessary.
But, sir...
I'm sorry, Mr. Scott, but there will be no refit.
Admiral, I don't understand. The Enterprise is not...
Jim, the Enterprise is 20 years old. We feel her day is over.
But we had requested. We had hoped to take her back to Genesis.
That is out of the question.
May I ask why?
In your absence, Genesis has become a galactic controversy.
Morrow paces up and down.
Until the Federation Council makes policy,
you are all under orders not to discuss with anyone your knowledge of Genesis.
Consider it a quarantine planet and a forbidden subject.
On board the Klingon vessel, Krug and his crew watch the Genesis data file. Kirk himself introduces a series of computer-animated diagrams.
To fully understand the events on which I report, it is necessary to review the theoretical data on the Genesis device. As developed by Doctors Carroll and David Marcus, Genesis, simply put, is life from lifelessness. It was the intention to introduce the Genesis device into a pre-selected area of a lifeless space body, a moon, or other dead form. The device, when delivered, would instantaneously cause the Genesis effect. Instead of a dead moon, a living, breathing planet now exists, capable of sustaining whatever life forms we see fit to deposit on it.
From where the device hits, a red glow spreads over the cratered surface of the moon. A covering of jagged grey rocks is swiftly transformed into blue water enclosed by green shores. The data file ends.
So. Speak. Great power. To control. Dominate. Speak.
Impressive. They can make planets.
Oh yes, new cities, homes in the country. Your woman at your side, children playing at your feet. And overhead, fluttering in the breeze, the flag of the Federation. Charming. Station.
Yes, my lord.
The Klingon gets up stiffly.
Share this with no one. Understood, my lord. We are going to this planet. Even as our emissaries negotiate for peace with the Federation, we will act for the preservation of our race. We will seize the secret of this weapon. The secret of ultimate power. Success, my lord.
The USS Grissom heads towards a planet orbiting an orange sun. A caption reads, "The Genesis Planet, Stardate 8210.3. On the newborn planet, stretches of blue sea appear beneath the banks of cloud. On the bridge, Lieutenant Savick, a Vulcan with pointed ears and angled eyebrows, reports to Captain Esteban.
We have reached destination planet at point 035.
Very well, Lieutenant. Helm? Execute standard orbital approach.
Standard orbit, aye, sir.
Communications. Send a coded message for Starfleet Commander, Priority 1. Federation science vessel Grissom arriving. Genesis planet, Mutara sector to begin research. J.T. Esteban commanding.
Aye, sir. Coding now.
Dr. Marcus, it's your planet.
Begin scanning, please.
Dr. David Marcus leans over Savick.
This is where the fun begins, Savick.
Just like your father. So human. All units functional. Recorders are on. Scanning sector 1. Foliage in fully developed state of growth. Temperature, 22.2 Celsius.
Sector 2 indicating desert terrain. Minimal vegetation. Temperature 39.4.
Sector 3, subtropical vegetation. Temperature decreasing rapidly.
David consults Savick's monitor.
It's snow. Snow in the same sector. Fantastic.
Fascinating.
All the varieties of land and weather known to Earth within a few hours' walk.
The captain joins them.
Metallic mass.
Close-range scan.
A 2-meter-long cylindrical mass.
A photon tube. Gravitational fields were in flux. It must have soft-landed.
In code to Starfleet. Captain Spock's tube located on Genesis' surface.
Yes, sir. Coding your message.
The word life form flashes quickly on the monitor above the metallic mass.
I don't believe it.
What is it?
If equipment is functioning properly, indications are an animal life form.
Esteban turns to David.
You said there wouldn't be any.
There shouldn't be any.
Cross-referenced and verified. An unidentifiable life form reading.
Do you wish to advise Starfleet, sir?
Wait a minute. We don't know what we're talking about here.
Why don't we beam it up?
Oh, no, you don't. Regulations specifically state nothing shall be beamed aboard until danger of contamination has been eliminated.
Captain, the logical alternative is obvious. Beaming down to the surface is permitted.
If the captain decides that the mission is vital and reasonably free of danger.
Captain, please, we'll take the risk, but we've got to find out what it is.
Or who?
Admiral Kirk, in the company of Uhura, Zulu, and Chekhov, proposes a toast.
Absent friends. Admiral, what's going to happen to the Enterprise?
She has to be decommissioned.
Will we get another ship?
I can't get an answer. Starfleet is up to its brass in Galactic Conference. No one has time for those who only stand and wait.
Sir, about Dr. McCoy, how is he?
Well, that's the good news. He's home, resting comfortably. Pump full of tranquilizers. They say it's exhaustion. He promised me he'd stay put. Well, we'll see. Ah, Mr. Scott. Come.
The door slides open, and a man in a hooded brown robe steps into the room. He removes his hood to reveal grey hair and pointed Vulcan ears.
Sarek.
The distinguished elderly man steps up to Kirk.
Ambassador, I had no idea you were here. I believe you know my crew.
I will speak with you alone, Kirk.
Please excuse us.
The crew make themselves scarce.
Ambassador, I would have come to Vulcan to express my deepest sympathies.
Spare me your human platitudes, Kirk. I have been to your government. I've seen the Genesis information and your own report.
Then you know how bravely your son met his death.
Why did you leave him on Genesis? Spock trusted you, and you denied him his future.
I saw no future.
Only his body was in death, Kirk, and you were the last one to be with him.
Yes, I was.
And you must know that you should have come with him to Vulcan.
But why?
Because he asked you to. He entrusted you. With his very essence, with everything that was not of the body, he asked you to bring him to us, and to bring that which he gave you, his Katra, his living spirit.
Sir.
Kirk lays down his glass.
Your son meant more to me than you can know. I'd have given my life if it would have saved his. Believe me when I tell you, he made no request of me.
He would not have spoken of it openly.
Then how is
Kirk, I must have your thoughts. May I join your mind?
Kirk and Ambassador Sarek sit down, facing each other. Sarek lays his right hand on the side of Kirk's face, the fingertips strategically positioned, the thumb below Kirk's chin, the forefinger below his eye, the middle finger on his temple. As he suddenly applies pressure, Kirk shuts his eyes, and so does Sarek.
You spoke of your friendship.
Yes.
Ask you not to grieve.
Yeah.
The needs of the many outweigh
the needs of the few
or the one.
Kirk's eyes glisten with tears.
Spock. I have been and always shall be your friend. Live long and prosper. No.
Sarek soberly withdraws his clawed hand, ceasing the mind meld. In a mournful daze, Kirk bows his head.
Forgive me. It is not here. I had assumed he mind melded with you. It is the Vulcan way. When the body's end is near.
We were separate. He couldn't touch me.
I see.
The two men look sorrowfully at each other.
And everything that he was. Everything he knew. Is lost.
Sarek rises slowly and heads for the door, leaving Kirk staring ahead blankly, his sad face bathed by the light of the open fire.
Please wait.
Sarek stops and turns back.
He would have found a way, if there was that much at stake. Spock would have found a way.
Yes. But how?
What if he joined with someone else?
Kirk's watching footage of Spock in the reactor core chamber.
Engine room flight recorder visual, stardate 8128.78.
Go.
The tape plays.
Ship. Out of danger.
Yes.
Back 0.77.
Scotty and Bones hold Kirk back.
Flight recorder visual 28.77.
Go.
No! You'll flood the whole compartment!
He's dying. He's dead already.
Back 0.76.
Outside the chamber, Bones lays a hand on Spock's shoulder.
Flight recorder visual 28.76.
Go.
You're not going in there.
Perhaps you're right. What is Mr. Scott's condition?
Well, I don't think that he...
Sorry, Doctor, I have no time to discuss this logically.
Spock knocks Bones out with a Vulcan nerve pinch.
Freeze. Repeat. And augment.
Spock lays a hand on the side of Bones' face.
Remember.
Kirk turns away from the screen to Sarek.
McCoy.
One alive, one not. Get both in pain.
What must I do?
You must bring them to Mount Silea on Vulcan. Only there can both find peace.
What you ask is difficult.
You will find a way, Kirk. If you honor them both, you must.
I will. I swear.
Transporter room, stand by to energize.
Aye, sir. Energizing now.
A mountain range forms the backdrop to subtropical vegetation in Sector 3 of the Genesis planet. In a shimmering light, David and Savick are beamed down to the planet.
Grissom to Savick. We're picking up radiation from the life form.
Affirmative, Captain. Our readings are well below danger level.
Very well. Exercise caution, Lieutenant. This landing is Captain's discretion, and I'm the one who's out on a limb.
I'll try to remember that, Captain.
Ahead of them, lying on a bed of ferns, is Spock's coffin. On its muddied surface, red letters read Mark 6, and beneath it, small, slimy, flat creatures swarm over the soft ground. David, tricorder in hand, looks down at them.
There are your life forms. These were microbes on the tube surface. We shot them here from Enterprise. They were fruitful and multiplied.
But how could they have evolved so quickly?
David steps forward, the creature slithering out of the way as his boot presses into the soft mud. He opens up the coffin. Astonishment passes across his face.
Savick.
Savick peers inside too. The coffin is empty apart from a black robe adorned with white Vulcan lettering lying in a crumpled heap. David picks it up and hands it to her.
What is it?
Spock's burial robe.
Suddenly, the ground shakes and a strong wind whips the trees. Hearing a cry, David and Savick look round and head off. Kirk's with Commander Moreau in a bar.
No, absolutely not, Jim. You're my best officer. But I am Commander Starfleet, so I don't break rules.
Don't quote rules to me. I'm talking about loyalty and sacrifice. One man who's died for us. Another with deep emotional problems.
Now, wait a minute. This business about Spock and McCoy. Honestly, I never understood Vulcan mysticism.
You don't have to believe. I'm not even sure that I believe. But if there's even a chance that Spock has an eternal soul, then it's my responsibility.
Yours?
As surely as if it were my very own. Give me back the Enterprise. With Scotty's help, I can...
No, Jim. The Enterprise would never stand the pounding, and you know it.
Then I'll find a ship. I'll hire a ship.
Out of the question, my friend. The Council has ordered that no one but the science team goes to Genesis. Jim, your life and your career stand for rationality, not for intellectual chaos. Keep up this emotional behavior, and you'll lose everything. You'll destroy yourself. Do you understand me, Jim?
I hear you. I had to try.
Of course. Thanks for the drink. Anytime.
Kirk gets up and heads for the exit, where Chekhov and Sulu are waiting for him.
The word, sir?
The word? Is no. I am therefore going anyway.
You can count on our help, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Sulu. I'll need it.
Shall I alert Dr. McCoy?
Please. He has a long journey ahead of him.
They enter a turbo lift. Bones saunters into a bar crowded with an assortment of guests. A humanoid figure with a metallic head. Two guests playing a three-dimensional computer game. A human couple petting two creatures resembling fluffy balls. Bones sits himself down at a table, and a waitress with a blonde wig and futuristic cocktail waitress attire comes up.
Long time, Doc.
Yeah. Anybody been looking for me?
I have, but what's the use? What'll it be?
Altair water.
That's not your usual poison.
Bones is confused.
You expect one to order poison on a bar. It's not logical.
Got it.
She goes. A figure on the next door table, who has tufts of hair sprouting out of his waxen face, drains his glass and comes round to Bones' table.
To your planet, welcome.
Bones is alarmed as the figure sits opposite him.
I think that's my line, stranger.
Oh, forgive. I here am new. But you are known, being McCoy from Enterprise.
You have me at a disadvantage, sir.
My name not important. You seek I. Message received. Available ship stands by.
How much and how soon?
How soon is now. How much is where?
Somewhere in the Mutara sector.
Oh, Mutara restricted. Take permits many. Money more.
Aren't going to be any damn permits. How can you get a permit to do a damn illegal thing? Look, price you name, money I got.
Place you name, money I name, otherwise bargain, no.
All right, damn it. It's Genesis. The name of the place we're going is Genesis.
Genesis?
Yes, Genesis. How can you be deaf with ears like that?
Genesis allowed is not. Is planet forbidden?
Look, backwards, friend. Genesis may be planet forbidden, but I'm damn well.
A man interrupts them.
Sir, I'm sorry, but your voice is carrying. I don't think you want to be discussing this subject in public.
I'll discuss what I like. And who in the hell are you?
Could I offer you a ride home, Dr. McCoy?
Where's the logic in offering me a ride home, you idiot? If I wanted a ride home, would I be trying to charter a space flight? How in the hell do you know who I am?
Federation security, sir.
Bones stands up. The agent pulls him back down. Bones grasps his shoulder in an unsuccessful attempt at a Vulcan nerve pinch.
You're gonna get a nice long rest, Doctor.
In the unstable Sector 3 of the Genesis planet, tall cactus plants are capped with snow. Light flakes drift down onto the alien landscape. David and Savick crouch down by some footprints, taking readings on a tricorder, a multi-purpose scanning device.
Savick to Grissom. We are definitely reading a second life form.
We concur. Proceed with caution, Savick.
They move on.
The hell is going on down there?
At Federation security.
Make it quick, Admiral. They are moving him to the Federation funny farm.
Yes, poor friend. I hear he's fruity as a nutcake.
2 minutes.
The agent lets Kirk into a cell where Bones lies asleep on a couch. Kirk wakes him.
Jim. How many fingers do I have up?
That's not very damn funny.
Your sense of humor's returned.
The hell it has. What's that?
Lexarin.
Lexarin? What for?
You're suffering from a Vulcan mind meld, Doctor.
It's his revenge for all those arguments he lost.
Let me see your hand. This will make you well enough to travel.
Sulu enters the reception.
Where's Admiral Kirk?
He's with the prisoner.
Get him quickly. Commander Starfleet wants him right away.
One agent goes to the cell, the other, sitting behind a console, yawns.
Keeping you busy?
Eyeballing the diminutive Sulu, the agent stands up and towers over him.
Don't get smart, Tiny.
Admiral, Starfleet's man
is sick. Here, take a look.
Kirk punches him out. Sulu twists the other agent's arm behind his back.
Side elevator. Agent's on their way up.
As Kirk ushers Bones out, Sulu hurls the agent over his shoulder, zaps the computer console with a phaser, and follows the other two into a turbo lift.
Don't call me Tiny.
More armed agents enter the reception as the lift doors shut.
Unit 2, this is Unit 1. The Kobayashi Maru has set sail for the Promised Land. Acknowledge.
Message acknowledged. All units will be informed.
You're taking me to the Promised Land?
What are friends for?
On board the docked USS Excelsior, Scotty's on his way out when he meets the ship's captain, Stiles, emerging from a lift.
Ah, Mr. Scott. Calling it a night?
Yes, sir.
Turning in myself. Looking forward to breaking some of the Enterprise's speed records tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Good night.
He enters the lift.
Level, please.
Transporter room.
Thank you.
Up your shaft.
In the transporter room.
Roger. Old City Station at 2200 hours. All is well.
Understood. All stations clear.
You amaze me, Commander.
Oh, how is that?
A 20-year space veteran, yet you choose the worst duty station in town. I mean, look at this place. This is the hind end of space.
Peace and quiet appeals to me, Lieutenant.
Yeah, well, maybe that's okay for someone like you, whose career is winding down. But me, I need some challenge in my life, some adventure, maybe even just a surprise or two.
Well, you know what they say, Lieutenant. Be careful what you wish for. You may get it.
Kirk enters with Bones and Sulu.
Good evening, Commander. Is everything ready?
Step into my parlor, gentlemen.
That's Admiral Kirk, my God.
Very good for you, Lieutenant.
But it's damn irregular. No destination orders, no encoded IDs.
All true.
Well, what are we going to do about it?
I'm not going to do anything about it. You're going to sit in the closet.
The closet? What, have you lost all your sense of reality?
This isn't reality.
She points a phaser.
This is fantasy. You wanted adventure? How's this? The old adrenaline going? Huh? Good boy. Don't get in the closet.
Okay.
Go on. Go on.
I'll just get in the closet. Okay.
The closet door shuts.
I'm glad you're on our side. Can you handle that?
Oh, I'll have Mr. Adventure eating out of my hand, sir. And I'll see all of you at the rendezvous. Oh, and Admiral. All my hopes.
The crew are beamed aboard the Enterprise. Standing on round individual platforms, bright transporter beams surround them and they vanish. On a conical protrusion at the centre of the saucer, lights go on. Kirk leads his party into the dimly lit bridge, where Scotty and Chekhov are waiting for them.
As promised, she's all yours, sir. All systems automated and ready. A chimpanzee and two trainees could run.
Thank you, Mr. Scott. I'll try not to take that personally.
His crew beam proudly.
My friends, I can't ask you to go any further. Dr. McCoy and I have to do this. The rest of you do not.
Admiral, we're losing precious time.
What course, please, Admiral?
Mr. Scott?
I'd be grateful, Admiral, if you'd give the word.
Kirk gives a satisfied smile.
Gentlemen, may the wind be at our backs. Stations, please.
The men take up their positions.
Engage all the systems.
Aye. Engaged.
Clear all moorings.
Cleared, sir.
1/4 impulse power.
1/4 impulse.
Sulu makes an adjustment at the helm. Seated in the captain's chair, Kirk stares ahead as the Enterprise drifts gradually backwards. On the bridge, Chekhov turns away from his console, a hand raised to his earpiece.
Sir, Commander Starfleet on emergency channel. He orders you to surrender this vessel.
No reply, Chekhov.
Aye, sir.
Steady as she goes, Sulu.
Captain Stiles is relaxing in his quarters, filing his nails.
Yellow alert. Captain to the bridge. Yellow alert.
He presses a button.
Bridge, this is the captain. How can you have a yellow alert in space dock?
Sir, someone is stealing the Enterprise.
The captain frowns.
I'm on my way.
Alert, yellow alert. Off station, yellow alert. Alert, yellow alert. Off station, yellow alert.
The Enterprise glides backwards past the observation deck.
1 minute to space doors.
Are you just gonna walk through them?
Calm yourself, Doctor.
The Enterprise continues to drift slowly backwards, ever closer to the still closed space doors.
Sir, Excelsior powering up with orders to pursue.
Yellow alert.
Stiles enters the bridge.
Status?
Yellow alert.
All automates ready and functioning. Automatic moorings retracted. All speeds available through transwarp drive. Incredible machine.
Going to the captain's chair.
Helm. 1/4 impulse power.
The USS Excelsior maneuvers away from its docking position in pursuit of the Enterprise.
30 seconds to space doors.
Warning, secure space doors. Warning, secure space doors. Warning, secure space doors.
Now, Mr. Scott.
Sir?
The doors, Mr. Scott.
Hi, sir, I'm working on it.
The approaching space doors remain firmly shut. Kirk and Scotty stare tensely ahead as the Enterprise almost reaches the closed doors. The double doors slide open. Kirk and Scotty's mouths gape as the Enterprise just squeezes through the ever-widening gap into the pitch blackness outside.
We have cleared space doors.
The Enterprise, looking from above like a trimaran with a round dish on its front, turns round as it floats away from space dock. Moving towards the space doors itself, the Excelsior has the Enterprise in its sights.
Full impulse power.
Aye, sir.
The Enterprise moves away from space dock using the impulse engine at the rear of the saucer. Captain Stiles issues orders.
Stand by a tractor beam.
Tractor beam? Aye.
Now he tries to get away with warp drive. He's really in for a shock.
Stiles grins smugly. The Enterprise arcs round underneath the cap of space dock's mushroom-shaped structure, the surface of the Earth beneath it. The Excelsior, now out of space dock, sweeps into view, hot on the Enterprise's tail.
Excelsior closing to 4,000 meters, sir.
Scotty, we'll need everything you have.
Aye, sir. Warp drive standing by.
Stiles hails the Enterprise.
Kirk.
You do this, you'll never sit in the captain's chair again.
Warp speed.
Aye, sir.
The Enterprise vanishes in a streak of colored light.
Prepare for warp speed, stand by transwarp drive.
The Excelsior crew busily prepare to engage the warp drive.
Transwarp at your command, sir.
Full power level.
Execute.
The first officer hits a button, but the ship doesn't respond.
Full power level.
The crew feverishly punch controls. Stiles gets up from the captain's chair and peers at the first officer's console. The transwarp factor chart flickers to be replaced with the words, "Good morning, Captain."
Transwarp drive, maximum velocity in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The Excelsior slows to a halt. The Enterprise streaks away at warp speed.
Scotty, as good as your word.
Aye, sir. The more they overthink the plumbing, the easier it is to stop up the drain. Here, Doctor, souvenirs from one surgeon to another. I took them out of her main transwarp computer drive.
Nice of you to tell me in advance.
That's what you get for missing staff meetings, Doctor. Gentlemen, your work today has been outstanding. I intend to recommend you all for promotion in whatever fleet we end up serving. Best speed to Genesis.
David and Savick struggle along through a dense blizzard, holding their hands up to shield their faces from the gusts of snow. They follow the readings from the tricorder device David holds out in front of him. David puts the tricorder away, Savick pulls out a phaser. The two warily approach the source of the noise. Making their way through the snow-covered mounds, they spot a movement ahead. David gets the tricorder out again and they venture forward. Savick leads the way, stops and crouches down beside the life form. A young boy, naked and trembling in the snow. Savick wraps the boy up in a blanket. Brushing back his dark hair, she reveals pointed ears and she exchanges a look with David. Savick leans in close to the boy's face.
Savick Wiemisch, Coop der Eben.
I am Savick, can you speak? The boy stares blankly at her.
The Genesis wave. His cells could have been regenerated.
Savick pulls out her communicator.
Captain, this is Savick. Come in, please.
Yes, Savick, go ahead.
We have found the life sign. It is a Vulcan child, perhaps 8 to 10 Earth years of age.
A child?
How did he get there?
It is Dr. Marcus's opinion that this is...
The boy touches her face.
That the Genesis effect has in some way regenerated Captain Spock.
One of the crew looks dubiously at the captain.
Savick, that's extraordinary. What would you like to do next?
Request permission to beam aboard immediately.
Savick, does Dr. Marcus think there could be any chance of radioactive contamination? No.
None that he can detect, sir.
All the same, I'm going to advise Starfleet and get instructions.
I'm sure Starfleet would approve, sir.
Probably true, but let's do it by the book.
Stand by on this channel. Go.
Starfleet Command, this is USS Grissom on subspace coded channel 98.8. Come in, please.
The communications officer raises a hand to his earpiece.
Sir, something is jamming our transmission. An energy surge.
Locate.
Consulting his console.
Surge from astern, Captain.
The Klingon ship decloaks and hurtles after the Grissom.
Oh my god.
Giving chase, crew orders, gunner, target engine only.
Aka! Dosh! Chota! There.
Captain, what is happening?
We're under attack.
Stand by for evasive. Bah.
The Klingon ship releases a disruptor blast from its main hull and destroys the Grissom.
Come on, pull!
Krug screams, I wanted prisoners.
But stop! Gah.
The gunner protests, a lucky shot, sir. Krug whips out a disruptor and zaps the gunner, who disintegrates on the spot. Krug spits animal.
Hot the bah!
Sir, may I suggest...
Say the wrong thing, Torg!
If it's prisoners you want, there are life signs on the planet. Perhaps the very scientists you seek.
Madam, calling Grissom. Come in, please.
Very good.
Grissom, this is Savick on emergency frequency. Come in, please.
The infant Spock touches Savick's nose, then his own nose.
Savick, what happened to them?
It would seem that Grissom was destroyed by an enemy attack. We must go. They will soon come after us.
David lifts up the boy and Savick leads them away. On board the Enterprise...
Estimating Genesis 2.9 hours present speed.
Can we hold speed, Scotty?
Aye, she's got her second wind now.
Scan for vessels in pursuit.
Scanning. Indications negative at this time.
Sulu, Scotty, and Kirk look astonished at Bones manning the science station.
Did I get it right? Great, Bones, just great.
Krug leads two of his henchmen through the Genesis planet's jungle undergrowth. Krug stops and holds up his own scanning device. The Klingons move on. Blanketed in fog, David and Savick find a clearing in the jungle and sit down. David keeps his arms wrapped protectively around the infant Spock.
It's time for total truth between us. This planet is not what you intended or hoped for, is it?
Not exactly.
Why?
I used proto-matter in the Genesis Matrix.
Proto-matter? An unstable substance which every ethical scientist in the galaxy has denounced as dangerously unpredictable.
But it was the only way to solve certain problems.
So, like your father, you changed the rules.
If I hadn't, it might have been years or never.
How many have paid the price for your impatience? How many have died? How much damage have you done? And what is yet to come?
David squirms under Savick's questions. Striding through the overgrown, windswept landscape, Krug's party finds Spock's open coffin in the clearing where it landed. A mutated, snake-like creature writhes around in front of the coffin. One of Krug's henchmen pulls out a disruptor, but Krug stops him. Krug steps forward and grabs the creature by the neck. It wraps its long, red, hairy body up his arm and round his neck, squeezing his throat. Suffocating, Krug squeezes back until a black liquid oozes out and Krug throws the dead creature off him. Krug reports into a communicator, bridge, nothing happening here. Leading his party on, he stops and turns back to see the sun sinking behind the jagged horizon, plunging the landscape into darkness. David stands alone on a rocky outcrop, watching the sun set until the shadows engulf him. Looking up and around him at the misty jungle, he strolls back across the rock. In the jungle clearing, Savick crouches down in front of the child Spock, dabbing his fevered brow with a cloth. His mouth gaping open and his eyes wide and frightened, the boy breathes heavily. Savick stands up and moves away, then turns back anxiously to look at the boy again. He now has his eyes closed, his chest still heaving. Savick heads off. The boy opens his eyes with a start. Savick joins David on the rocky outcrop. David consults his tricorder.
This planet's aging and surges.
And Spock with it. It seems they're joined together.
They are.
How long?
Days. Maybe hours.
Savick gives him a hard stare.
I'm sorry.
Savick sits down on a rock and looks up at David.
It will be hardest on Spock. Soon he will feel the burning of his Vulcan blood.
I don't understand.
Ponfar. Vulcan males must endure it every seventh year of their adult life.
David and Savick look in the direction of the noise. David uses the tricorder.
Whoever they are, they're getting closer.
I'll go.
No. I'll do it. Give me your phaser.
Savick hands over her phaser and David goes off. The Enterprise streaks through space.
Sir, Starfleet calling USS Grissom. A warning about us.
Response?
Nothing, as before.
What's the Grissom up to? Will she join us or will she fire on us? Check out break silence. Send Captain Esteban my compliments.
Aye, sir.
Kirk leans over his friend Bones.
How are we doing?
USS Enterprise calling.
How are we doing?
Respond, please.
Funny you should put it quite that way, Jim. We are doing fine. But I'd feel safer giving him one of my kidneys than what's scrambled in my brain.
Admiral, there is no response from Grissom on any channel.
Kirk straightens up.
Keep trying to check up. At regular intervals.
On the Genesis planet, Savick is fast asleep. The tree beside her is uprooted. The ground tears and spews out smoke. Standing up, she looks around and sees that Spock has transformed into a teenager.
Don, Kisadla.
So it has come, she says, and moves forward to kneel down in front of the trembling adolescent, who looks up at her, teeth gritted.
It is called Ponfar. Ponfar.
He stares at her with frightened, agonized eyes.
Dwangitu Tsarafel.
Will you trust me? Lightning flashes across the sky. To soothe him, Savik raises the index and middle fingers of her right hand, and with her other hand she takes his left hand and makes him press the tips of his index and middle fingers against hers. Holding his uncomprehending gaze, she runs her two fingers down the back of his hand, returning them to his outstretched fingers. She gives an encouraging nod. The young man repeats the ritual, running his fingers down the back of her hand, then returns them to her fingers. She gives an approving nod. Grasping her wrist with his right hand, the teenage Spock runs his fingers down and up the back of her hand, and presses his fingertips again against hers. The two Vulcans stare at each other, the firelight playing across their faces. Back on the Enterprise.
We are secured from warp speed. Now entering Genesis sector. Proceed at impulse power.
The Klingon bird of prey orbits the Genesis planet. On board, two of the crew, manning the vessel in Krug's absence, consults a monitor.
Vessel entering sector.
Yes. Federation battlecruiser. Have they scanned us?
Not yet.
Engage cloaking device. The ship disappears, leaving behind just a blurry particle distortion. The slimy Targ snarls. The Enterprise cruises on impulse power towards the Genesis planet, lights blinking in the pitch blackness. Chekov reports to Admiral Kirk from the navigation console.
I swear there was something there, sir.
What did you see?
For an instant, a scout-class vessel.
Could be Grissom. Patch in a hailing frequency.
Kirk turns away and paces the bridge.
Grissom, this is Enterprise calling. Please come in.
Morning on the Genesis planet. Savik and the young man doze, the communicator beside them.
Grissom, this is Enterprise calling. Here
it is. Yeah, whoop!
Back!
Krug's henchmen drag them to their feet and hustle them over to where David is already sitting on the ground in front of Krug.
Doc! I've come a long way for the power of Genesis. And what do I find? A weakling human, a Vulcan boy, and a woman.
My lord, we are survivors of a doomed expedition. This planet will destroy itself in hours. The Genesis experiment is a failure.
A failure. The most powerful destructive force ever created.
With a sly look in his eye, he steps forward.
You will tell me the secret of the Genesis torpedo.
I have no knowledge.
Then I hope pain is something you enjoy. Joe, quick!
He's handed his communicator.
I order no interruptions.
But, sir, Federation starship approaching.
Bring me up!
Grissom, this is Enterprise calling. Do you read?
Kirk awaits a response.
Grissom, this is Enterprise calling. Please come in.
Krug returns to his ship and announces battle alert.
Light
vehicle! Say again, Grissom. This is Enterprise, Admiral Kirk calling. Captain Esposito, Lieutenant Savik. Please come in.
Report status. We are cloaked. Enemy closing on impulse power range, 5,000 kilograms.
Good. It's just a turn of luck I have been waiting for.
As the Enterprise moves seemingly alone in the Genesis planet's orbit, Chekov again looks up from his console.
Nothing on my scanner, sir.
Short range scan, Mr. Chekov. Put it on visual, Mr. Sulu.
Kirk and Sulu peer through the viewscreen. Krug does the same on his ship.
Range 3,000 kilograms.
Steady. Continue on impulse power.
The Enterprise approaches.
Range 2,000 kilograms.
Stand by to transfer energy to weapons. At my command.
Kirk and Sulu continue to scrutinize the pitch blackness through the viewscreen. Kirk suddenly points to an indistinct blur.
There. That distortion, see it?
Yes, sir. It's getting larger as we close in.
Firing range, sir.
Krug leans forward menacingly.
Ahwe!
Gunner.
Dosh, Ibosh!
Target engine only, understood?
Yes, Chu. Da.
The gunner replies, understood clearly, sir.
Opinion, Mr. Silver.
I think it's an energy surge.
Enough energy to hide a ship, would you say?
A cloaking device.
Red alert, Mr. Scott.
Red light fills the bridge.
1,000 kilograms closing.
All power to the weapon systems.
Aye, sir.
Wage.
No shields? My guess is right. They'll have to decloak before they can fire.
May all your guesses be right.
Von Barrett, Telecom.
Die, Rush.
Stop.
Red light floods the bridge of the Klingon ship too as it decloaks in a glittering blur.
Klingon bird of prey, she's arming torpedoes. Fire, Mr. Scott.
The Enterprise fires two red torpedoes out of the photon tube, hitting the Klingons, engulfing the ship with an electric blue light, and rocking the bridge.
Good shooting, Mr. Scott.
Krug stays calm as sparks fly and his targ keels over.
Precautionary, Mr. Chekov. Shields up.
Aye, sir.
Krug cradles his lifeless pet as the damaged Klingon ship drifts and spins downwards.
Emergency power!
The Klingon ship turns.
Sir, the shield's non-responsive.
Scotty,
the automation system's overloaded. I didn't expect to take us into combat, you know.
The Klingons are in attack position.
Fire!
The Klingons fire a bright green disruptor blast at the Enterprise, scoring a direct hit on the top of the saucer, throwing the crew around in the darkened and smoking bridge.
Emergency power! Prepare to return fire! Scott, can you transfer power to the paper man?
I don't think so, sir.
What happened?
They've knocked out the automation center. I've got no control over anything.
Mr. Sulu? Nothing, sir.
The crew stare ahead in dread-filled realization.
So, we're a sitting duck.
The Enterprise and the Klingon bird of prey face one another.
Ready to fire emergency, Duke.
Krug thrusts out his arm to hold off further action.
Why haven't they finished us? They outgunned me 10-1.
My lord, the enemy commander wishes a truce to confer.
Put him on screen.
Kirk's face appears on a monitor.
This is Admiral James T. Kirk of Federation Starship Enterprise.
So, the Genesis commander himself...
By violation of treaty between the Federation and the Klingon Empire, your presence here is an act of war. You have 2 minutes to surrender your crew and your vessel, or we will destroy you.
He's hiding something. You may have dealt him a more serious blow than I thought.
How can you tell that?
I trust my instincts. Admiral Kirk, this is your opponent speaking.
Do not lecture me about treaty violations. The Federation, in creating an ultimate weapon, has become a gang of intergalactic criminals.
It is not I who will surrender, it is you.
Standing in the Hayesfield room, Kirk keeps his cool. Krug sits back, licking his lips and cocking his head with a wry smile.
On the planet below, I have 3 prisoners from the team who developed your doomsday weapon. If you do not surrender immediately, I will execute them one at a time as enemies of galactic peace.
Who is this? How dare you take prisoners?
Who I am is not important. That I have them is. I will allow you to speak to them.
Savick's dragged up and a communicator's pointed at her.
Admiral. This is Lieutenant Savick.
Savick? Is David with you?
Yes, he is. And someone else, a Vulcan scientist of your acquaintance.
This
he alive?
He is not himself, but he lives.
He is subject to rapid aging like this unstable planet.
Hello, sir. It's David.
I'm sorry I'm late.
It's okay. I should have known you'd come. Savik's right. This planet is unstable. It's going to destroy itself in a matter of hours.
David, what went wrong?
I went wrong.
I don't understand.
I'm sorry, sir. Just don't surrender. Genesis doesn't work. I can't believe they'd kill us for it.
Admiral, your young friend is mistaken. I meant what I said. And now to show that my intentions are sincere, I shall kill one of the prisoners.
Wait a minute. Give me a chance to talk.
Kill one of them, I don't care which, orders Krug. On the Genesis planet, his Klingon henchman, standing in front of Savik, draws out a sharp knife. As the Klingon prepares to strike, David hurls himself at him, throwing him to the ground. Up, the Klingon kicks David in the stomach, they tussle and fall to the ground, and the Klingon stabs David.
David?
The communicator's held in front of Savik's mouth.
Admiral, David is dead.
Dumbstruck, Kirk backs away, stumbles and falls against his chair. He gazes around, his mouth hanging open, his body crumpled with grief.
I killed my son.
Bones and Scotty watch their captain with grim faces.
There are two more prisoners, Admiral. Do you want them killed too? Surrender your vessel.
Kirk teeters and sits back in his chair.
All right, damn you. All right.
He gathers his thoughts, his face strained, struggling to suppress his emotions.
Give me a minute to inform my crew.
I give 2 minutes for you and your gallant crew.
Still shell-shocked, Kirk turns round in his chair and bows his head over the railing. Krug snaps orders at one of his crew standing at his shoulder.
Take every last man, form a boarding party armed heavily.
They outnumber us, my
lord. We are Klingons! Once you control the ship, we will transfer our flag there and take Genesis from their own memory banks.
Bones leans over Kirk, who grasps his arm, easing him away. Kirk spins back round in the captain's chair and recovers his cool.
Mr. Sulu, what is the crew complement of a bird of prey?
About a dozen officers and men.
With some of them on the planet.
Kirk breathes heavily and swallows hard.
I swear to you, we're not finished yet.
Bones, you and Sulu to the transporter room. The rest of you with me. We have a job to do.
Kirk stands up.
Commander Klingon vessel. Prepare to board this ship on my next signal.
No tricks, Kirk! You have 1 minute.
No tricks. I'm looking forward to meeting you.
Krug turns round to his assembled crew.
Cholpa, Gizach! Come!
To the transport room. Success! The crew ready their weapons and leave the bridge. Kirk and Scotty gather round Chekov at his console.
Computer. This is Admiral James T. Kirk. Request security access.
The computer monitor flashes up, identity acknowledged.
Computer. Destruct sequence 1. Code 1. 1A.
The computer confirms the command. Kirk looks across at Scotty.
Computer. Commander Montgomery Scott. Chief Engineering Officer. Destruct sequence 2. Code 1. 1A. 2B.
The command registers on the monitor. Now both Kirk and Scotty look at Chekov.
Computer, this is Commander Pavel Chekov, acting science officer. Destruct sequence 3. Code 1B, 2B, 3.
Destruct sequence completed and engaged. Awaiting final code for 1 minute countdown.
Code 0, 0, 0. Destruct. Zero.
Destruct sequence is activated.
A 60-second countdown begins. Kirk hurriedly leads Scotty and Chekov out of the bridge and along a corridor.
Kirk, your time runs out.
All set.
Into a communicator.
Commander Klingon vessel. We are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Transporter, stand by.
Transporter beams like radiant pillars of light envelop the crew. Their forms fade, then disappear, leaving glittering particles behind, to be replaced only moments later by the crew of the Klingon ship, who raise their handheld disruptor weapons alert. One Klingon beckons to his comrades to follow him out of the transporter room into the curved corridor, illuminated by flashing red strip lights. The Klingon heading up the patrol stops at intervals to look around before advancing further. One Klingon brings up the rear, on his guard, pacing backwards, weapon raised. The Klingons enter the bridge. Finding it empty, the patrol leader hails Krug.
My lord, the ship appears to be deserted.
How can that be? They're hiding.
Yes, sir. But the bridge seems to be run by computer. It is the only thing speaking.
Speaking? Let me hear.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5.
Get out!
Three,
get out of there! Get out!
1.
Explosions rip the bridge apart, flinging the unsuspecting Klingons through the air over the consoles. The conical bridge section at the center of the saucer is engulfed in a massive fireball. The Klingon ship banks away from the Enterprise as it starts to sink. Fire eats away the inside of the saucer-shaped command section until it erupts. The Enterprise is blown apart, and the burnt-out shell of the once great starship floats away from the Inferno, its saucer section half demolished. It burns up as it enters the Genesis planet's atmosphere. A group of silhouetted figures stand on a rocky outcrop. It's the one-time crew of the Enterprise, their heads tilted upwards, melancholy expressions on their faces as they watch the fiery pink comet shape streak downwards across the multicolored sky.
My God, Bones. What have I done?
What you had to do. What you always do. Turn death into a fighting chance to live.
Sulu studies a tricorder.
Planet core readings. Unstable. Changing rapidly.
What about surface life signs?
There.
Sulu points ahead. The ground trembles. Disturbed by the earthquake and the electric storm, Spock is in agony. Savick sits by him. Spock gets up, runs a short distance away, then drops to his knees again, bent double, holding his head in his hands. Savick follows and drops down in front of him, grabbing his shoulders. Spock looks up at her. He's aging fast. Kirk and his men are nearby and battle on across the infernal, tempestuous landscape. Spooked by a falling tree, the Klingons run up to Spock and one grabs him.
No! Don't touch him!
The Klingon shoves her away and drags Spock up. He responds by launching the Klingon into the air. Spock curls up in a ball again. The other Klingon leaves his comrade face down on the ground, comes over and stares at Spock. The Vulcan takes his hands away from his face to reveal a man in his 20s. Savick and the Klingon stare in wonderment and fear as Spock's face stretches and contorts. Kirk and his crew scramble down a slope towards the clearing and stop as they see a cluster of figures. The Klingon whips round, weapon raised, so Kirk shoots him with his phaser, throwing him backwards through the air. The group hurry forward and stop in front of Spock and Savick.
Bones!
Bones steps forward to attend to Spock. Scotty, Chekov and Sulu gather round him too. Bones studies a medical tricorder. Sulu consults his standard tricorder. Bones looks up to see Kirk wander over to his son David's body lying on the ground nearby. Kirk drops to one knee beside the body and takes off his coat. Bones and Scotty observe him compassionately. Having draped his coat over the body, Kirk rises and looks over towards the crew. He goes up to Savick, his face grave.
What happened?
He gave his life to save us.
Kirk moves back to Spock, crouches beside him and sheds his jacket to cover him.
Rapid aging. All genetic functions highly accelerated.
What about his mind?
His mind's a boy. It seems, Admiral, that I've got all his marbles.
Is there anything we can do?
Only one thing, sir. Get him off this planet. His aging's part of what's going on around us.
The ground nearby crumbles away, forming a wide crater which belches out flames. The crew turn round to watch, then all eyes return to the captain. Kirk leans forward and picks a communicator up off the dry grass. He rises and walks a few yards away, then lifts the communicator to his lips.
Klingon Commander, this is Admiral James T. Kirk. I'm alive and well on the planet's surface. I know this will come as a pleasant surprise to you, but our ship was the victim of an unfortunate accident. Sorry about your crew, but as we say on Earth, c'est la vie.
Kirk's crew watch him, slightly bemused.
I have what you want. I have the secret of Genesis. You're gonna have to bring us up there to get it. You hear me?
Kirk peers upwards at the broiling sky.
I'm waiting for you! What is your answer?
A cascade of small rocks tumbles down the cliff face bordering the clearing. Kirk goes back to Spock as Krug is beamed down. He points his disruptor at the group.
Drop all weapons!
Kirk drops his phaser. Krug motions sidewards with his weapon.
Over there! Over, Kirk!
The others get up and move away, leaving Spock on the ground. Kirk stays put. Krug talks into a communicator.
Vaults! Prisoners have beam coordinates!
You should take the Vulcan too!
No!
But why?
Because you wish it! Malk! Toyichu!
Malts activate beam. The others are beamed up. Kirk and Krug face one another.
Genesis! I want it!
Beam the Vulcan up! And we'll talk!
Give me what I want, and I'll consider it!
You fool, look around you! The planet's destroying itself!
Yes, exhilarating, isn't it?
If we don't help each other, we'll die here!
Perfect! Then that's the way it shall be!
Kirk nods. A rock bursts out of the ground underneath Krug's feet, and he launches himself off onto Kirk. The two roll about on the ground, then drag themselves up. Hands wrapped tightly around Kirk's throat, Krug lifts him up off the ground and shakes him.
Give me Genesis!
Kirk pounds his fists down onto Krug's shoulders. Krug headbutts him back onto the rock. Kirk retaliates with a barrage of punches to Krug's face, then tries to kick him. Krug grabs his foot and sends him back flipping through the air. Kirk picks up a branch and attacks Krug with it. The pair do battle in the fire-torn landscape. Krug shoves Kirk repeatedly against the rock. Kirk boots him between the legs and is thrown aside. Krug falls down a ridge. Kirk throws himself down onto him and the men carry on wrestling on a rocky outcrop. Krug shoves Kirk perilously close to the edge, below which molten lava spews threatening smoke and flame. Kirk spins them round and is knocked back against the rock. Now standing close to the edge, Krug struggles to keep his balance as the outcrop quakes and falls away from underneath him, leaving him clinging onto the cliff edge.
Give me your hand!
Krug grabs Kirk's ankle and pulls, dragging him onto the ground, so Kirk drives his foot into Krug's face.
I have had enough of you!
Krug loses his grip and plummets downwards. A flower of flame blossoms briefly on the surface of the molten lava as Krug lands. Looking around him, Kirk heads off. The jungle's ablaze. Clambering back up the ridge, Kirk looks behind him, shielding his eyes, as the sun rises over the planet, now reduced to a primordial state. Kirk clambers over the top of the ridge. All around, the ground is caving into fiery pits. Trees keel over, consumed by fire. Kirk finds Spock lying on the ground and kneels down exhaustedly beside him. Nervously regarding the unstable surroundings, he pulls Spock to his feet. Dust and ash are swept by furious winds around the infernal landscape. More towers of rock crack through the earth. Standing between walls of fire, Kirk shouts into a communicator. He waits, tensely watching the fierce pyrotechnics. Just seconds before the ground crumbles away from beneath their feet, Kirk and Spock are beamed up. On the Klingon ship's bridge, all of Kirk's men are assembled. One of the Klingons turns and lifts his weapon as doors slide open. Kirk points his phaser.
Don't. How many more?
Just him, Sam.
Bones, help Spock. We've got to break out of orbit.
To the Klingon.
You. Help us or die.
I do not deserve to live.
Fine, I'll kill you later.
Let's get out of here.
As the Genesis planet crumbles and burns, threatening to self-destruct at any second, Sulu, Chekhov, and Scotty study the Klingon ship's consoles.
Where's the damn antimatter inducer?
This? No, this.
Kirk shrugs.
That or nothing.
Scotty hits a button and the Klingon ship powers up.
If I read this right, sir, we have full power.
Go, sir.
As the Klingon ship, its wings fully outstretched, soars away from the Genesis planet's orbit, great clouds of lava explode into space, leaving glowing orange chunks floating through the black void.
Goodbye, David.
We are clear and free to navigate.
Best speed to Vulcan. Mr. Chekhov, take the prisoner below.
Aye, sir.
Wait! You said you would kill me.
I lied.
Kirk motions him away with a jerk of his thumb. The adult Spock lies with his eyes closed, bones standing over him.
Spock. For God's sakes, talk to me. You stuck this damn thing in my head, remember? Remember? Now tell me what to do with it. Help me.
No response from Spock. Bones stares down at him, his careworn face darkening as he contemplates his fate. He sits back, raising his eyebrows slightly as he starts to speak again, choosing his words carefully.
I'm going to tell you something that I never thought I'd ever hear myself say. But it seems I've missed you. And I don't know if I could stand to lose you again.
Spock's face is motionless, apart from a slight flickering of the eyelids. The Klingon ship approaches the red-tinged planet Vulcan. Ambassador Sarek, dressed in a robe adorned with jewel-encrusted gold breastplate, and attended by two handmaidens, joins Uhura.
Ambassador, they are on approach. They're requesting permission to land.
Permission granted. Tell Kirk. We'll be ready.
The ship sails through a canyon of sand-colored rock.
Mr. Sulu, you're on manual.
It's been a while, sir. Here we go.
Partially obscured by the dense orange smog cloaking the planet, the Klingon ship elegantly glides round the cliff, lifting its wings like a bird as it nears the landing platform.
Retrothrusters.
Beams of light shining up from the platform encircle the ship as it shifts itself round, the retrothrusters spraying out a cloud of smoke, before it gently touches down. Mist drifts across a courtyard with a glistening pool in the middle. In the background, tall pillars topped with flames flank a vast staircase. Sarek watches, stony-faced, as a hatch at the rear of the ship opens and the crew carry Spock on a stretcher down the ramp. The crew stop as Uhura steps forward, escorted by two guards. The crew continue to the bottom of the ramp. Uhura reaches them. Kirk greets her with a one-armed hug.
Sarek is waiting above, sir.
The crew hesitantly move on. A Vulcan in red ceremonial garments strikes a gong. On Mount Salea, a tall column of stone cloaked in mist is a round, open temple. A squarish, U-shaped altar towers over the temple, and at its base, steps lead up to a platform. On the platform, two plain rectagonal benches are being watched over by hooded figures. Talar, an elderly priestess in flowing gown standing at the altar, opens her arms as a procession enters the temple. Following Sarek, Kirk and his crew are stopped from going any further and stand in two lines to watch the ceremony. Handmaidens in flowing white dresses lay Spock on one of the stone benches and line up on the steps, each with one hand raised. The priestess places a hand over Spock's face.
Sarek, child of Skoan, child of Solka, the body of your son breathes still. What is your wish?
I ask for Fal Tor Pan, the refusion.
What you seek has not been done since ages past, and then only in legend. Your request is not logical.
Forgive me, Talar. My logic is uncertain where my son is concerned.
Who is the keeper of the Katra?
I am. McCoy, Leonard H., son of David.
McCoy, son of David, since thou art human, we cannot expect thee to understand fully what Sarek has requested. Spock's body lives. With your approval, we shall use all our powers to return to his body that which you possess. But, McCoy, you must now be warned. The danger to thyself is as grave as the danger to Spock.
Bones nervously wets his lips.
You must make the choice.
Bones nods and glances across to Kirk.
I choose the danger.
Aside to Kirk.
Hell of a time to ask.
Hiding a smile, Kirk stares ahead. Sarek ushers Bones forward. Sulu, Scotty, Uhura, Chekhov and Savik move to one side. Kirk lingers a while and joins them. Sarek stops at the bottom of the steps as two handmaidens lead Bones up to the altar. The crew watch enthralled. Bones lies on the other bench, which is moved nearer to Spock's bench. Standing between them, the priestess stares dead ahead. Sarek watches.
Ben, T'Val, Navoon.
The Vulcan strikes the gong at the side of the altar. The priestess turns to Bones and places her left hand on his face, the middle three fingers on his forehead. Her lips mouthing silent words, the distinguished woman places a clawed hand over Spock's face, the fingers strategically positioned. She closes her eyes and lowers her head. The faces of all the people gathered in the open temple are illuminated by the electric flashes of lightning in the sky. Savik shuts her eyes, Sarek too, tipping his head back to the sky. The priestess, her arms outstretched, channels Spock's Katra, his living spirit, from Bones to Spock. Scotty looks across at Savik, who's lost in concentration. The priestess slowly swivels her head, responding to an unseen impulse, but keeping her hands on Bones and Spock's faces as they lie still, eyes shut. Kirk squints at the bright lightning and paces anxiously, then returns his attention to the ceremony. The priestess holds her majestic pose with maximum concentration. The sun rises over Mount Salea, streaking the sky with pink, orange and red. Silhouetted against the dawn, the Vulcan strikes his gong. Kirk waits patiently as the ceremony draws to a close. A figure in a hooded white robe with gold markings stands with his back to him at the altar. Kirk advances, passing Savick and his crew, who get up off their knees, as the six handmaidens come down the steps, followed by the priestess being carried in a sedan chair. Bones is next to come down the steps, accompanied by Sarek. They come up to Kirk, and Bones answers his questioning look.
I'm all right, Jim.
Bones moves on.
What about Spock?
Only time will answer.
Kirk sees Spock being attended to at the altar.
Kirk, I thank you. What you have done is...
What I have done, I had to do.
And at what cost? Your ship. Your son.
If I hadn't tried, the cost would have been my soul.
Sarek regards Kirk with grudging respect. They both turn to look as Spock descends the steps, head bowed, the loose hood obscuring his face, clasping his hands together. He's flanked by two bald Vulcans in identical poses, and followed by a woman in a white dress. The group moves straight past Kirk without acknowledging his presence. Frowning, Kirk stares after them. Climbing the steps that lead to the bridge connecting Mount Celea to the rocky cliff, Spock stops and turns round. He takes off his hood. His dark, narrow eyes slowly lift, and his gaze alights on Kirk. He looks away, blinking, his brow furrowing, then moves back down the steps. All eyes follow Spock as he reaches Savick. Her lips part as if to speak, but noting his blank expression, she averts her eyes and lowers her head. Spock moves along the line to Scotty, then Uhura, then Chekhov, then Sulu. They all meet his gaze, smiling, as he studies each face carefully. He passes Bones without a flicker of recognition before finally reaching Kirk. The two stare at each other. Kirk's eyes search Spock's face.
My father says that you have been my friend. You came back for me.
You would have done the same for me?
Spock gives Kirk a quizzical look.
Why will you do this?
Because the needs of the one outweighed the needs of the many.
Spock looks away, confused. Hands behind his back and head bowed, Spock turns and wanders past Bones and Sulu, then pauses, standing in front of his ex-crewmates. Kirk watches Spock as he falters, trying to assemble his memories.
I have been, and ever shall be, your friend.
Yes. Yes, Spock.
Ship. Out of danger.
You saved the ship. You saved us all. Don't you remember?
Spock furrows his brow and purses his lips, then walks back over to Kirk, who looks at him with pleading eyes. Spock's sloped eyebrows lift in sudden recollection.
Jim. Your name is Jim.
Yes.
A smile spreads over Kirk's face. Spock looks back at Bones, who taps his forehead with a wry smile. All the Enterprise crew now surge forward, happy smiles on their faces, to reacquaint themselves with their old friend. Spock turns back to the delighted Kirk and raises his eyebrows. Over the image of Mount Celea, its outline blurred by the tangerine haze, a caption reads, "And the adventure continues." ITFC audio description was by Adam English.